Welcome to the Roundtable, episode 119. I'm Jennifer Eller, the Events and Environment Ministry Leader, and with me is Mike Hill, our lead pastor, and then between us is Aaron Briggs.
Yay! I was always waiting to use these things. Aaron, great to see you.
You as well.
All right, so quick question. Number one movie that you have ever watched in your life?
Oh, man, that's an easy one for me. It's Braveheart.
Seriously?
Yeah, love it.
Would you ever, like, paint yourself up and go running around like that?
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. Me too. I've always wanted to do that when we had horses.
I wanted to
take my shirt off, paint my face, and ride
it.
Up and down and be just like.
Morning. I've done way dumber.
Huh?
I've done way dumber.
Like what?
I mean, all kinds of things. No, I mean, it's not really like stuff you want to talk about on.
It's not podcast worthy.
No, but I mean, I've done way dumber than that.
Okay, so tell me why Braveheart. Do you want to be Braveheart?
No, I think. I mean, there are so many great lines in that. It's got everything. It's got comedy. It's got a man that stands up for
comedy.
Yeah.
And Braveheart.
Oh yeah.
Okay. I must.
It's not podcast worthy either, but
I must have missed the.
But there's some funny stuff in there.
You don't want to be William Wallace.
Not particularly.
You don't want to be Gladiator.
Listen,
don't
I don't look good in
about wanting to be those guys.
I don't look good in a kilt.
Well, that doesn't matter. I'm telling like the tough guy. Do you want to be the tough guy?
Oh, I think doesn't every man?
Yes.
We're taught today masculinity is toxic, but I don't believe that for one second.
I want to be Rip. I want to be the Gladiator. Yeah. I want to be William Wallace.
Yeah. Shredded.
Eric, not that way. Come on. Doesn't he want to be, he wants to be somebody, doesn't he? Come on, Jennifer.
He is somebody.
Eric's never said like if I could be anybody, I
no,
would be.
No, but he does like Braveheart too. So he probably does because that's one of his favorite movies. Yeah.
Well. I mean, in the ending where he yells freedom.
Yeah.
When they're trying to get him
when
to,
they're ripping him in mm-hmm. pieces.
Yeah, literally over and it's bow down to what we say. Yeah. Bow down. And he says no.
No.
That's like, poof. Yeah. Love it.
Jennifer, do you have a favorite movie?
Actually, it's Pretty Woman. Richard Gere and Julia Roberts.
Because, yes. Like, why is that one your favorite?
I don't know. I mean, there's a love story to it, and she comes from, I mean, she was a prostitute, and then she, you know, he
is that
loved
Richard
her.
Gere?
Yeah, huh? Richard Gere. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then, just the pretty dresses.
So do you like the romantic crap?
Of course.
Okay. Yes.
He
says
crap. Do you make Eric watch it?
He does watch it, yes.
Oh, Judas.
Don't take me to the medieval, the Braveheart, all that. Nope, Gladiator. Nope. Don't have a desire
but
to
he
watch
has
it.
To watch... That crap?
Of course he does.
That is not fair.
That's true love.
Sarah asked me the other day to watch something. I'm like, I'm not watching a romantic movie, and I'm not watching somebody that makes me cry. I'm like, the world already is sad. Why do I want to watch a sad movie? Yeah. Do you read books?
The Bible. That's about it.
Okay, well, give me one story in the Bible that you've always been fascinated with.
Always or?
Well, maybe lately. Do you got one lately?
I mean, I've been hammering through some of the prophets.
Okay.
A story in particular, I don't know, but I've been really trying to get through Ezekiel.
Okay.
And
why?
I just think there's a lot within the prophets.
Yeah. I just didn't know if like you like felt led to go there or somebody told you.
No,
to
I mean,
there.
I, you know, my journey with when it came to the Bible started with Proverbs. And my dad actually told me, he's like, that's not a great book to start with.
Really?
He's like, if you haven't like really got into the Bible, like there's better ones to start with.
Okay.
And I went there anyways. And there's some stuff that's hard to make sense of,
yeah.
I guess. So I, you know, I went into that and then it was just sporadic, whatever, wherever I ended up going, I would go. But then I sort of, something came over me just to go through the prophets. I love the book of Isaiah. Skipped over Jeremiah, which is a terrible idea because that's a great book too. And then I just was like, you know what? How many books can I get through? Okay. Like how many books of the Bible can I get through?
So do you have like a spiritual discipline? Do you do it in the morning? Do you do it at night? Do you do it?
I think I always start with something in the morning.
Okay.
But usually like I find it easier for me at nighttime.
Really?
I get home from, I don't want to do anything after work, but get in bed anyway. So okay. It's like easy to get in bed with my Bible and take notes and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's, I know you probably should start your day with it.
Well, I'm all for just doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that there is a value in starting your day. I think there's value in just doing something.
Right.
I mean, I don't necessarily think that we need to condemn people because they do it at night.
Right.
You know, because I mean, unlike most people, I don't know that everybody loves the morning. You know what I mean?
Like I get up at 4:30, but I don't do it by choice. Like I'm hitting that snooze.
Yeah.
A couple times at least.
And so here's a question for you. Why set your alarm if you're going to hit the snooze? Is there like satisfaction?
Agreed.
In that? No, I'm asking. Like I
wish my mom was here right now because she could help. I don't know. She's one of those people that.
Is she a snoozer?
Heck yeah, we both are. My dad was that guy that would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I would come downstairs at times and he would be on the couch praying. And I'm like, is he asleep? No, he's awake. He's awake. And he got up by choice. Like he just woke up. He had that inner alarm clock. Mm-hmm. I have the inner alarm clock to stay awake. I can stay awake whenever.
No, I'm not condemning.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I have heard of like Sarah's kids set multiple alarms to get up in the morning.
That's my people.
And I'm like,
I do too.
How many alarms do you need? If the one goes off, don't you just get out of bed?
At least four.
Do you set multiple ones?
Well, if I know I have to get up for something, if I'm tired, if I went to bed late the night before, make sure I get up. But Eric does, he'll set one for 5:15 and mine goes off at 6 and he's still in bed. And then he gets up and then I'm like, dude, now I'm behind. Because why did you get up with your alarm at 5:15? Because I set mine because I need up at 6 o'clock, you know? So,
Yeah, Maya is weird. I set my alarm clock, but I just always wake up.
I see, but you have you kind of have that profession though. Like, and I don't mean like outside of here, you have that profession where there's other living things dependent upon you, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I was just curious because I've seen people like that are snoozers and some people just get up and I didn't know if it's like a sense of satisfaction, like you got an extra 30 seconds of sleep.
It's nine minutes.
How long does it go?
It's 9 minutes.
That's what a snooze is?
Well, I take that back.
You know that.
Absolutely. That's how I plan for that like last get up, you know? I'm like, okay, like this is, now I'm at that moment where it's now or never. It's now or you're texting in.
Okay. Is there something that gets you going in the morning? Are you a coffee drinker? Yep. Energy?
Coffee.
Okay. Not energy drinks.
Oh, no. No. Absolutely not.
Never?
I mean, like once or twice a year, I'll drink one.
Okay. Are you an energy drink person?
Oh, no. Those are bad for you.
They're terrible for you.
People
Nick, do you drink energy drinks?
Celsius are supposed to be good for you.
Do they taste like diet?
I get the non-carbonated one, so it almost tastes like a tea.
I heard from, I don't know who it was, they said Celsius is actually, should be banned. Like probably. That it's causing so many heart palpitations.
Wow.
Is that the right word?
Well,
that's the right word,
if
right?
That means anything, it'll be pushed in elementary schools next year anyway. So. Hey,
in the cafeteria at Crestview or in Flint Springs is Celsius.
Yeah, I'm sure the FDA is on board real soon. Pumping that through.
Oh, so. That's funny. Tell me something in the world that's either getting you fired up or excited.
Anything
getting you fired up?
Good or bad, you mean?
Either way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
When the movie Sound of Freedom came out.
Oh, yeah.
That's one that to me is...
Tell everybody that hasn't listened, what's Sound of Freedom?
It's a movie about sex trafficking, in particular with kids. But I mean, it's massive worldwide and it's happening... It's happening here in Huntington. There's no way it's not because they're showing it happen in communities. And there's some kind of company that is called like Underground Railroad or whatever, where they're trying to save people that are involved in it. And they're in communities, like wealthy communities in Connecticut, places like that. So if that's the case, it's going on everywhere.
Right.
And, you know, I'm a big sports guy. So Tim Tebow is big into that also. And it's just, I feel like it's all come at one time, so much so that even like I've talked about it with Rob Hollinger, who's running for mayor here, where when he gets elected,
little plug there, Rob.
Yeah, when he gets elected, that anything he needs or wants in that arena, like I'm all for hopping
into. I just think the idea that like out of this, that movie, the depravity that has to be going on in the world today, that women would be trafficked, kids would be trafficked, and that it is almost a higher grossing business than drugs.
Than drugs.
I'm like, What depraved person in the world?
Parents are, I mean, selling their own children.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The depravity. Ugh. Like, how bad can it get?
Right.
You ever wonder that? Like, what you see today? Like, how much worse can it get?
I mean, I do. But again, you asked about reading and what did 2 Timothy is pretty clear on where it's going to get to. I mean, it really is. It's really clear on where it's going to get to.
Does that make you afraid for your son? Do you ever think about that?
I was just talking with Keely about this Sunday when just before we were about to start teaching. No, I don't.
Okay.
Because God knew when my son would be born.
Yeah. I talked to somebody the other day. They're like, I want to just tell my kids don't have kids, you know, because of the worry of just like what the world's going to turn into, how bad it's going to get, what trials they're going to face.
I get it. But yeah. You know what? Listen, I'm 42 years old and you preached a sermon a couple of weeks ago that had me ready to, I wanted to go have, like, I can't.
Braveheart.
There's no
you
woman.
You wanted to paint yourself blue. And-
no, but there's no woman in my life. But that, like, I wanted to go have more kids when you gave the, so I'm serious. Hey, the one about quivers.
Is this a plug?
No. The one about having more arrows for your quiver. I was like, man, I've done a lot wrong in my life, a lot. And I haven't been good at a whole lot of things. And I'm not saying I'm great at being a dad, but that kid, I mean, just like I told you even earlier, I get hurt and the first thing that kid's doing is praying.
Yeah.
Like I need more arrows. I want more arrows to send into the world. That's all.
Right.
I'm at the age where it's probably not wise.
How old are you?
42. It's probably not wise. I mean, I don't want to be doing this when I'm 60.
Well, I mean, you could find a 25-year-old or something, and I mean...
I did that once. It didn't work out.
I'm just saying. I mean, you can did go for once. The younger ones and see how that works out for you.
It's...
No.
Nope. Did it once already. Tried that.
Okay. Anything else getting you fired up, getting you excited?
Not really.
Okay, tell us about growing up. So you were a pastor's kid.
I was.
Right? And so I think it's interesting anytime that there's a pastor's kid to just kind of like get your perspective of the church or your perspective of God growing up with, you know, somebody that was in, because it's one thing, perspective on God, another thing, perspective of the church.
You said exactly what I was going to say.
That is always an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, so.
My perspective of the church wasn't always great. I have a lot of the same experiences that a lot of people who don't go to church had people that were judgmental. And because I was a pastor's kid, you can just about guarantee. Now, I don't know if it's true with your kids, but I got in trouble.
One thing you can guarantee with a pastor's kids, they're going to be the trouble.
Yeah, I was rebellious. I mean, I was partying, doing drugs. I mean, I was that kid.
Well, wait a second. Let's talk about this for a second. So first of all, did you guys travel? Did your dad plant different church, or was he a church planner?
No. In fact, he got.
So where were you guys?
So he.
Even know your story.
He went to college in Colorado.
Okay.
And went to a Bible college that was in Colorado Springs, and then,
that's where you were born.
Nope, I was actually born in Columbia City. I know it's weird.
Okay.
So born here at the age of four, they moved to four or five, moved to Colorado.
For him to go to
Bible school.
Okay.
To become a pastor. Okay. And then
that was just like a revelation or what?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, what was he doing before?
Managing a fast food restaurant.
Really?
He was
so he just 19
years old.
I'm gonna be a pastor.
Yeah, something like that. And I mean, he must have been a little older than that because he was 19 when I was born. So.
And your mom was like, sure.
She was on board.
Okay. Anyway,
there was a few experiences they had in certain situations where, which any of us who have ever been, like, you know, when you have to have had those where something occurs and you're like, there was nothing else that could be but God. Like, they had a few of those moments where I've heard those.
Sure.
I won't get into all of them, but there was moments where those kind of things occurred and they were like, yeah, we're supposed to go I'm supposed to go to college to be
a
pastor.
So he goes to school. So then from after school, then what?
Ithaca, New York.
Ithaca.
Where Cornell University is. So. If you're a person of morals and things like that, really out of, like, a fish out of water in that area. I mean,
in Ithaca, New York.
Yeah. So, he took a church that they were about to shut down.
Okay.
And it was averaging like 30 people a week.
Okay.
And, you know.
And so this is when you're, how old are you?
I was eight. Okay. Just had my eighth or ninth birthday.
Okay. So anyway, I just wanted 89. To get the context because I wasn't sure. And because he pastored all the time in New York?
All the time that he was in New York, yes. Not all the time that I stayed a couple more years after they left.
Okay.
So, but yeah, he was, and then there was like a 2 year and a half period of time in between one church and another church.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that I was going to get at is, so like the whole concept of everybody gives a stigma to PK kids, like the PK kids are the kids that rebel. You think they rebel any more than anybody else? And if you think they do, why? Like, why would that be?
Do I think they necessarily do? No. But I also think there's a, when you're a PK, there's a lot of people praying for you too. So sometimes the answer to prayer is you getting in trouble. Sometimes it's you getting slapped around a little bit by issues that will stop you from further getting in trouble. And I definitely was that kid.
You were that kid.
Yep.
So in that growing up, like perspective as a kid, and then how did it change as you grew up? So you're 8 or 9 years old. I mean, I'm assuming your perspective of the church isn't bad then.
No, I probably didn't really have my first where I had some, and my parents were real good about not talking about things in front of us. So when there were church issues, there were times when, say, the conversation would start and my dad would say, not now.
Right.
And then it was husband and wife talk later. We're kids. We didn't know. We just thought that the conversation ended. Mm-hmm. But as we grew into our late teens, early 20s, some of those conversations were had with us that were like, this is why we did what we did, just so you know. Mm-hmm. Like, this was going on. You guys didn't know about it.
Right.
Type of thing. And so, I mean, there was never a ton of detail in terms of about people in particular, but situationally with what was going on with inside the
So was there something inside of the church that turned you on, turned you off? Like, what was it that was—
That
like,
eye chair.
Huh?
That eye chair. Yeah, there was always those people, you know? And I'm not saying that the church shouldn't have something that's for people, but I think people always want to be fed and they never want to feed.
Right.
And that's a common theme.
I think the statistic, so any of you guys that are going to look this up, it's close to this, but in Barna's research, it says, and then he doesn't use the eye chair as an example, but he's like, why pastors leave or why pastors get out of the church. And essentially there's 15,000 pastors. And I think it's a month or every, I can't remember what it is, that quit because of the definitions of what happens in the eye chair. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just so much, I don't even know what the right word is. All me, all about me. Mm-hmm. And if you don't please me, you get crucified for not doing it.
Yes. I was married at our second church. I was married to a woman that I met. And she was a great, that one, I thought I had, she was a great girl. We just, we didn't work out.
Okay.
Met her there. And, we butted heads big time.
Okay.
And at times in our marriage, because she had grown up in that church forever. Mm-hmm. Her family had.
Mm-hmm.
And I came when I was, my dad came there when I was 20.
Right.
And I already kind of had an idea about what church should and should not be. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't living it anyways. I mean, I had just quit partying and eventually went back to that anyways. But I mean, I had just quit partying and kind of trying to start what I would say living the correct lifestyle, but without any substance.
Right.
And we butted heads big time on some of those issues. Cause she would say like, this is what's being said and this is what your dad's not doing. And I'm like, that's number one, it's my dad. And I know what my dad's heart is. My dad's heart is always about trying to win people to the Lord. And he can't, you're not, when you have a church of 300 plus people, you can't win everybody. Like, you're not going to make everybody happy. You can't make 30 people happy.
Right.
It's tough.
Right.
You know, it's hard to make everybody happy all the time.
Right.
So
take us through your spiritual journey. Like, so you grew up in a church and then you had a period of like, you walked away, had a period of,
I would say,
because obviously at some point you had a significant moment where you know you love Christ or come back, like, because you said you went through this period of, I mean, were you partying and still searching out the Lord? Did you just walk away? Like what was...
I never quit believing.
Okay.
Never. I mean, right down to even, I mean, if people didn't would know my history or where I'm from in New York, you know, I said Ithaca is where my dad's church was, but I grew up in Dryden, which is a really small town.
Like Scranton.
Way smaller.
Really?
Way smaller. Wait, are you talking Scranton, PA? Are you talking?
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Oh, Scranton's.
Yeah, isn't that the office?
Yeah, Scranton.
I'm thinking.
Listen, Scranton. If you drive down I-81, Scranton's on the one of the boards. You know, it's on the signs.
I know.
Dryden's not. Dryden's way smaller.
Out there at some point, I feel like I drove by. Scranton's supposed to be this little small town, right?
No. Yeah. Okay. So Ithaca's got like.
I don't know why Scranton came up.
Ithaca probably has like 30,000 people there when college is not in session. But then again, Cornell University and Ithaca College. So that doubles roughly during, and then Cortland is like the next big city town, maybe like, I don't know, 12,000 people, something like that. And Dryden's in the middle.
Okay.
Like really tiny.
Okay.
So, just, there was some really rotten, I mean, there's a show that did a 5-part documentary on my town. Like we had some horrible things happen there.
Really?
Yeah. Real
like people getting their head chopped off or.
Yeah.
What?
You had a friend.
Literally.
Yeah. Friend that got murdered. Right.
Multiple.
Right? Yeah.
What?
Like 15?
Our head football coach. Yeah.
I remember you telling that story. Yeah.
Our head football coach. We had two of our cheerleaders. Murdered. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was real bad. And even through all of that, like you know, I'm not going to say I didn't go through my phase where I was mad at God.
Right.
Didn't understand why. Well, like, what do people do to deserve? One of my best friend's family lost 2 children in 13 months, both car crashes. Like, how do you explain that to people as a parent? Like, I still to this day, I don't have answers for it.
Right.
But I also know that as we age, there are certain things you have to be okay not having answers to.
Right.
Because it's not our job to know.
So, but again, you're over there, you're in this, you got all this stuff going on. I mean, at this point though, you're not like loving the Lord.
Oh God, no.
Yeah. I mean, you're believing, but those things are.
Right. I wouldn't say I started loving the Lord until I was 40.
Okay.
So it's been it was roughly right about 2 years ago on the dot.
Okay.
And I always tried to instill biblical values into my child. I always tried to, in fact, I think it's ironic because when the first moment that really ever occurred was the day they sent all the kids home from school for COVID. Mm. My son got in the car and I was with my ex-wife was in the car with us and he was worried and something came over me just to pray. And I was using meth at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, so I wasn't sober. Mm-hmm. I wasn't by any means trying to live a life where I was following Christ.
Right.
And something came over me to pray with him, the three of us in the car. And it was the first time in my life where I had ever prayed. And in that moment, it was like I felt something come off, like a weight off of us. And I was like, none of us will get it. Not only will we not get it, we're going to be fine from it. I don't know what happened, but until I quit believing that that prayer worked, I never got it. My son's never gotten it. We both were fingernail biters, nasty human beings. I mean, like touching everything, going into-
What's so nasty about biting your fingernails?
Well, I mean, like, now I view it gross because I finally stopped doing that. And like I did it for 30 some years. Wow. And it's like, you know, you go into Walmart and you touch stuff. Mm-hmm. And then like the next thing you know, you're biting. And I'm like, man, we were disgusting.
No, see, that's why you didn't get it.
Probably.
That's why.
It might
be. These hand washer.
Right.
Hand sanitizer people.
Yeah.
They're sick all the time.
Well, I knew.
Hey, quit washing your hands.
Yes.
You touch stuff at Walmart and stick your fingers in your mouth.
You should never use anything anti, what is that?
Antibacterial.
Yeah. Because you have good bacteria on your hands. Okay. That's the science part of this.
You're preaching to the choir.
Yeah. Like you need the good bacteria on your hands. It's called normal flora.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
I don't disagree.
There you go.
You're preaching to the choir. Yep. I'm good with all of that. So you're out in New York.
Yeah.
You meet your wife.
Have first your wife. Yeah. Okay. First. Yeah,
and you have your son.
No. Yes. Yes. Son's here.
No, I know. But in New York.
Not in New York. No.
Okay. So why did you leave New York? So, I mean, and how did you, I mean, did you go from New York to here?
Yeah. Yeah, I got,
what?
I had a, I mean, there's, I had a pretty public, I had a pretty public arrest.
Okay.
And so I just ran from my problems.
Okay.
So
I don't even know what that, a pretty public arrest, like yeah. something you don't want to share. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I'll share it.
I mean, public, like.
Okay. So, I was a teacher.
Okay.
Sorry, Mom.
Well, no, you don't have to say
No, it's okay.
No, I don't mean it that way. No. I'm just trying to get my, I didn't know what.
No, it's okay.
So you were out
it's okay.
there.
I don't hide who I am. Okay. I don't hide. Like I can't, my answering for my past is over.
Yeah.
In fact, if anything, what it could allow people to do is understand that, there's nothing that's not salvageable. Jesus really likes to take things broken.
Amen.
And so,
you know, on Sunday, this is a side note, but when you were talking at the end of how Jesus loves everybody, I thought of Aaron and really? I thought of his story. You popped in my head, you coming. It's like, wow, redeemed. You know, talking about being redeemed from things. It was like, yeah. So,
yeah, that's anyways, awesome.
It was pretty, yeah. It's like, ooh.
So, I, again, like I said, I was married and we were not very, intimacy was a big issue.
Okay.
Right. So, and I was a teacher.
Okay.
So, I had started. Instead of cheating in a way where I could not get caught, I thought I would pay for cheating.
Got it.
And I made a verbal agreement with a police officer.
Got it.
And so once my name hit the
That makes
sense. I got instantly. You know, I had to go home and tell my wife that.
Right.
Which that was probably the most. That was. Even still to this day, like I've actually been in contact on a couple different occasions with her since then. It's been 12 years now to say, you know, I don't care if I've apologized before, like what I put you through, I, no matter what our marriage was or was not.
Right.
Nobody deserves that.
Right.
I mean, like that was, she got publicly humiliated, publicly humiliated.
Yeah.
And that, still to this day bothers me.
Right.
So
then you from there end up in Huntington because your parents are here?
Okay. So at the time they were in Columbia City. Yep. And I was actually sort of flirting with the idea of moving back to Colorado because my brother was out there.
Okay.
Him and his now ex-wife weren't doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I don't know if I really want to go out there and cause an issue with them. I'm going through my own thing.
Right.
So I stayed here and I got a job as a bartender. That was a like really good idea. You know? Yeah, I go from teaching to bartending, and within 3 weeks, I got an OWI. So I was walking everywhere, and you know, really having to think through some things. And probably right at the end of that, when I was just about to get my license back, I met my son's mom. I had just actually done my 3-day stint in jail. And somebody had mentioned, I was going for my master's degree at the time, which was online. Somebody had mentioned that this coffee shop had free Wi-Fi. And I was like, cool. And I went down there and met my son's mom. We were together for 4 or 5 years. And as is the case with all relationships that I've found myself in so far, they somewhere along the lines, they quit working.
Yeah.
So,
But what brought your parents to Columbia City?
Oh, that part.
That's just like coming back home for them?
No. So my dad, again, this was one of those moments, actually. They were, my mom's mom had got diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. Like I said, my mom's a nurse. So she went to the point where she was like, I've followed you through the ministry for all these years and my mom's going to go and I want to be with my mom.
Yeah,
I want to take care of my mom before she goes. And my dad was on board with it. And so they packed everything up, moved back here. I think they moved in May and she was gone a month later.
Really?
Yeah, she almost died almost on my birthday, which would have, in fact, it was the day that my due date, like the day I was supposed to be born is the day she passed on. And that was in 08. And then I moved here in the beginning of 2012.
Right.
I ended up coming back here. They were in Columbia City. I stayed with them for a little while and then bought my own place in Columbia City and just sold that last year and lo and behold, got to go back and live with them again because it was half the drive from Columbia City to Bluffton where I work.
Right.
Huntington's only halfway there.
Right.
So sold my home and just kind of riding the storm.
So what was the thing through all of that? So you believe, but then you're kind of headed off on the wrong track. Things aren't quite going the way they should. You mentioned substance abuse and some problems. What brought you back? Like what's the thing that you think woke you up to the point of like, I got to get this right. I mean, I get it, God, but was there other things?
Yeah.
Were there like people involved? Like, tell me about it.
I got married again, which I was dating a girl who was like 15 years younger than me.
Okay. Hold on. So I don't mean this bad. So the first marriage, right? Second marriage.
No. Second marriage. I was never married to my son's mom.
Oh.
We've never got married.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Perfect, right?
Like, no, that's not what I meant. I'm just trying to stay low. So then another one.
Yeah.
Okay, got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. And which is funny too, because even when I was with my ex-wife, people would see the three of us, my son, and they would say, oh, he got his mom's hair. Yes, he did, but that was not his mom. He did get mom's hair, okay. Very much so. So yeah, I ended up meeting somebody. She was much younger. And because of that, we didn't take it. We were dating, but I think we both had an idea of what it was not going to be.
Okay.
And so, she was a type 1 diabetic and everything sort of, I didn't feel like it was necessarily my job to take care of that at the time. And one day I got home from work and she was almost dead, literally nearly dead on my couch. So I called an ambulance. So they took her to the hospital and they took her to the one in Columbia City and then rushed her to DuPont North. It was a big, big mess for 2 weeks. She was in a coma for 10 days. And in that period of time, there was a few moments where I was like, God was there with me. Like one of the days in particular, I had prayed. I mean, I did love the girl. I did, but I would never tell her that because I was like, this is 15 years. This is never going to work.
Right.
I'm not going to. And I was like being that typical guy that was like, I'm not going to tell you I love you. I'm not going to do that.
That's what typical guys do?
I don't know. I mean.
But you married her. So you still tell her
because,
that?
No. Listen, that's where I'm getting to. I'm getting to that. So she, while she was in the hospital, one of the days there, I had come in and I was praying. And again, she's in a coma, but I had walked in and just put my hand on her feet and all of her, I was talking to the nurse and she had around the clock nurses and she, the one nurse had said to me, I asked her how the night was and she said it was terrible. She had not been good. Mm. Like, be prepared. This may not go the way you want it to go. And I had just put my hand on her feet and started praying. About that time, all of her vitals stabilized. And the lady was like, whatever you're doing, keep doing that because it's working. She knows, like she knows who you are. So I went up and by her head and started praying with her. And the guy that was coming in to do her oral care said, all the medicine in the world won't fix her, but what you're doing right there will. Mm-hmm. He said, do you mind if I pray with you? And I was like, no, and I'm bawling. I was a mess. And he prayed with us. And the next day or maybe 2 days later, I went there and she was awake they didn't tell me that they were going to, but they got her, they got the, what's that thing called? They put down your throat.
Incubate you?
Something.
Did you say incubate?
Yeah. Isn't it incubate? No.
Yeah. Just like an egg. Incubate them. It's intubate.
Yeah. Close though. It was really close.
I'm gonna shut up over here.
It could be incubate. It could be. I think it's
whatever
intubate.
That tube is.
I think it's intubate, but
it might be.
I could be wrong. It could be incubate.
Yeah, they got all that out.
That's what our producer does. He checks on our language, right, Nick? Yeah.
He's Googling it.
English was not my forte.
No, but that's
neither, obviously.
Either way.
I didn't know what it was.
Incubate or intubate.
Whatever, yeah.
One of the two. They got it out.
Yeah, and so like after that, I had prayed along, when I was praying, I had prayed, again, and I wasn't living I wasn't even trying to live.
Don't you think that's funny? I think that part's funny. Not funny, but people could be completely far away from God. But when something happens, they come back to prayer.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's weird?
Well, I mean, I've always known it worked.
No, I know, but I just think that's so like, you're, what brings people back to that place? You know, what makes them be like, is it the being at the end of themselves? Is it?
I think in those moments, you're willing to try anything.
Mm. Yeah, I think you said, some people, you always knew God. I mean, that was my part of my story. I grew up in church. I always knew God. You prayed periodically. But yeah, when you get to that certain point, you know that that's the answer.
When you get to the end.
Yeah. You know, you haven't been walking it, but you know that's your answer.
Yeah.
Which I think is one of the reasons why it makes sometimes prayer difficult when things are going well. Not so much, but like harder to remember to do or to put the effort into it.
Yeah,
when things are like running smoothly.
Right.
Like, what do I have to?
Yeah, what do I have to pray for?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what else is there?
You better get ready. You better get ready.
Yeah, so anyway, so she gets out. Like, this was a turning point
and
for you?
We were married 4 months later.
Okay.
4 months later, we were married.
Okay. And so that was a turning point spiritually for you?
Okay. No, our divorce, our split was.
Okay.
Again, I had been back using meth. I was back on, had been using for 3 years probably. Almost 3 years straight, and had two different times where I almost got arrested, a time where I did get arrested, and I just never quit, didn't care. They didn't, I was like, I didn't feel like I had the right people, I guess, in place where I could, I knew it would require a massive amount of help, because once you use for that length of time, you're going to sleep for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And you got to sleep for 2 to 3 weeks. I mean, like, not straight, but pretty close to straight.
Really?
Yeah.
Just to get your body to recover.
Yeah. Because you haven't, I mean, sleep was something you deprived yourself of for 2 to 3 years. I mean,
so meth keeps you awake?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I was never that guy that was going to do drugs that would like put you to sleep. Like, I don't understand that.
Just like running down the road.
Yeah, like I'd want to do things. Like I would want to be able to like, okay, so I can go to work and do all the things I want to do and not have to sleep. Okay. That sounds awesome. Right. Until it's not.
Right.
You know, until it's not. So...
Okay, so the split happens and this is your like...
Yeah, I was in my eye chair. I just wasn't in a church.
Okay.
So I was... She wouldn't talk to me. Like I'd call her and whatever and I was trying to make it work. I was throwing every last ditch thing I could do to try to make it work. And she was like, if you hang up or if you yell at me again on the phone, I'm going to hang up on you and I'm going to block you. And we were talking and I... raised my voice and she hung up on me and blocked me and I threw my phone down and I literally cried out to God on my hands and knees, what did I do to deserve this? And for the first time ever in my life, I got an answer and I don't know what audible, I don't know if it was audible, I don't know if it was in my head, I don't know because I was bawling too. But I heard in the stillest voice, what did I do to deserve you running for 40 years?
Mm.
And I've never been the same. Mm-hmm. And I've just never been. I like, do I still war with my flesh? Yep. Do I still,
sure.
am I still a wretched human being? Yep.
Right.
But I've never been the same since. Mm. So
that
was
that,
the moment.
Yeah. So in that journey, most influential person, somebody that was walking the journey with, like who was the person for you during that time or even during all of your life? Do you have somebody that's
I mean,
like-
it's been, you know, at different points in time, it's been my mom and my dad. Okay. I would say for my younger years, boy, I butted heads with my dad bad, but like my dad was the influence. Hmm. He was, I, to some degree, I feel like if you don't butt heads with your teenage boys, you probably aren't a very good dad. Like you're probably not instilling some things that like, that are important. Yeah. Thank God my son's 9. He's not a teenager yet. But I know that there's probably going to be some times where we probably won't see eye to eye on some things because you don't understand things as a teenager.
Right.
You know, my dad would give me a hard time about drinking and doing drugs and stuff. And, you know, so much so that there was a few times where it almost got physical.
Right.
And I look back now and go, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right. For standing up, for caring.
I almost went to prison. I mean, I've been a felon before. Like I almost went to prison having him as my dad. I can't imagine if I hadn't had that.
Right.
I can't imagine.
Right.
Like I would have definitely, and I'm not I'm not built. I'm too small for prison. Way too small for prison. Way too small.
That is hilarious. Yeah. So dad and mom.
Yeah.
Influential people. Yep.
And then like, I've just always had, I think there's people that influence you, at different points. I'm one of those people that church isn't enough for me once a week. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching pastors preach and sermons 5 or 6 days a week. Yeah. I mean, that's what I fall asleep to every night. And it just like for a while I was listening to Stephen Furtick and really kind of pushed away from that on some issues that I look at and go, the more I get into the word, I'm not so sure how much he's that guy that you should, that you should listen to. But, now it's, you know, I listen to a lot of John MacArthur and Vody Bachum, probably Vody more so than even John MacArthur. Cause I love guys that preach the word with no shame, no shame. Like there's an interview he did for, I think CNN a few years back. And they were talking about, women, it was when Palin was running.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, no, I don't think she should be. And they were like, why? And he said, because the Bible says so. And they were like, well, you know, what about Deborah? And he said, listen, I'm not a politician. My job is not to bend to what the culture says. My job is to be a preacher and preach the word. And I was like, man, this guy, that's what got me started with him. I was like, this dude is vehement about the word and I love it.
Right.
So he's probably the guy I would say that recently has been influential.
Yeah.
In person, I'm kind of in that number two chair, man. I haven't really gotten out. I haven't gotten out. And like I've been scared to, again, a lot of my issues I've had with people, I've been scared to get back out into the world, I guess. And do some of the,
no, that makes sense.
You know?
Yeah. Good. All right. So we're at time. So you got questions, Jennifer, that didn't it go by fast?
On. Yeah.
Yeah. 38 minutes already.
And, yeah. Did go quick.
Well, Aaron has an amazing story, so, you know, that's easy. Okay, Peggy Eads here. Best childhood memory, and when did you decide to follow Jesus? Well, we kind of know when you said follow Jesus, but what was your best childhood memory?
Best childhood memory? Or are we going, where do we draw the line on childhood?
High school.
High school? Oh, that's easy.
Okay.
Man, I just actually posted this on Facebook. Man, I got to score a touchdown in Syracuse's. On Syracuse's field.
Oh,
it was an
80-yard
really? Interception return.
Wow.
It was a team that was projected to crush us.
And you beat them?
We were up 13-6, and I had the game-decisive interception.
Wow.
And we ended up winning 20-6.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
They have it on video?
You bet. It's on Facebook, man. It's on Facebook, yeah.
So you can go back. Did you post it on Facebook?
Absolutely.
You posted
from the VHS.
Your interception on
Facebook.
From
the VHS tape, which was I was watching on my TV.
Okay.
I took my
phone.
I'm
going to have to go find your Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can watch this interception.
Okay, just a comment from Troy Oswald. Just want to thank Aaron and his friendship and conversations over the past few years. It's awesome to see a man after God's heart.
Love that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's funny, him and my son have a little thing with each other.
Hmm.
He's my son told him that his band was mediocre.
That's awful.
So now Troy always picks on him.
That's hilarious. That he's got the guts to say that to Big Troy.
I know. He'll be sitting next to me in church when Troy's on stage and he'll be like,
he's like David and Goliath there.
Yeah,
he's,
right.
He's David. Yeah, going after. Karen Bennett, what is something God has taught you about himself since you become an adult that you never were taught as a kid?
Oh, I think that, I was taught this as a kid, but I don't think you can really be taught it until you have to walk through it. And that is Romans 8:28. You're not going to understand everything, but all things will work together. That's what I was even saying with the people that I grew up with that, I mean, man, we had all of us, we're all interconnected forever with some of our stories.
Mm.
And I can't believe how many people that I still will see posts on Facebook. And I know that Facebook's not, isn't necessarily the truth on everyone's life, but people that have over time have come to God that grew up in that town because some of those situations occurred, because they had to walk through some of those evil things that just wrecked us as kids, you know?
Wow.
And I think it gives perspective when things don't go your way as an adult or when things seem like they're way off track.
Yeah.
Sandy Atkinson, as a dad of a 9-year-old today, thank you for raising him in the church and letting God work in both of your lives. How can those of us who have grown children help support you as you navigate these critical years with Brody?
I don't know if I know the answer to that. I mean, I think, again, one thing that was always crucial for me when I was growing up was I didn't even realize how many people prayed for me. Mm. I pray for my son every day. Right. First thing I think of when I start praying after I give thanks in my prayer, the first thing I do is pray for my son. But anybody that wants to add him to their prayer list, that's probably the best thing you can do because I believe that prayer works, and I would never tell somebody not to offer up their prayers for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Yep.
Okay, Jenny Walker. She's got three, but we're only going to ask one here. How did being a pastor's kid, having that background, serve you while you were in addiction?
Well, I mean, as an addict, and when I was using and partying, I never quit believing, so much so that there were times where I'd be having conversations with people and passing a bong around literally talking to them about God. Terrible witness, but maybe that was the only people they were ever going to hear it from.
Right.
You know, but I have two science degrees. So I would always relate it back to that and say like, you got more faith if you can believe the science that you're taught than just believing it. Mm. You know, because a lot of it would stem from things like evolution or creation, you know, those type of subjects, but it would get into those conversations. So I would say if to answer the question, I would say having a firm understanding and belief in what God was, because I never questioned that. I never doubted that. I never didn't believe that. I just wanted to live my own life. I didn't want to wave the white flag, you know?
Right.
Surrender feels sometimes like it's the wrong thing.
Right.
As a man.
But you had a foundation, something to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Jenny also has a comment here. You're awesome, Aaron. Thanks for reminding us all that a joyful recovery is possible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
I heard her story. I was there for her story. She did the same for me. So
I think this is Janelle Smelser's number. Possibly. I'm not sure who it is, actually. What is your favorite or life verse?
You already said it, right? Romans 8:28.
No, that's a great one.
Okay, you got a different one.
Oh, my favorite one.
Do you have a tattooed on you?
I don't.
Okay. Do you have tattoos?
I do have two. Why
do you say it like that?
Because it says never get tattoos to the living or the dead, right? Isn't that what? I know. We did all this about the law. I get it. But I have one to the living, which is my son's footprints. And I have one to the dead, one of my best friends that got killed in a car crash. Okay. So I literally have both. It's like, the Bible verse is 2 Timothy 3:16. All scripture is God-breathed. Mm. That means whatever you read in there, you don't get to question.
Right.
You don't get to question it.
Right.
That one to me, when I started, and Proverbs 30 verse 5, which is every word of God will prove to be true. Mm. So you know those two and you understand those two. And it's like, man, it doesn't matter what I read in there. I may not understand it, but it has to be God-breathed and it's true.
Right.
So those are the two for me that have become like in my DNA.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, I love those. They might be mine too. I have some, but those are good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the last one from Jamie Tackett. What are some donations that would be helpful for the children's ministry?
Wow, look at that.
Honestly, like I haven't come across anything that we haven't... You know,
could dream, what would you want children's ministry to look like?
Basketball court,
Syracuse football field.
Yeah, like a
I mean, so you
listen,
can relive your past.
Listen, if we can get like a 40-yard football field. I mean, anything sports related, that's my bag, you know.
Champs, there's a football field.
I know. Like,
the only problem is it's Green Bay Packers turf.
That's all right.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Skin might fall off if you touch it.
That turf is so bad for sports. It really is. Like, you'll get dug in, and then the Nick Chubb injury.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen on grass or even the AstroTurf, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that was, again, fluky injury, but still, that Nick Chubb injury was. Did you see that?
No.
Do you know who Nick Chubb is?
His knee was like an elbow the opposite direction. It was really bad.
Running back for Cleveland. Yeah. And he got hit in the side of the knee. Yeah.
No, I did watch some of the Ohio State Notre Dame game. We had that on.
Okay. Who are you rooting for?
Of course, Notre Dame.
Yeah, that was a bummer.
Or Purdue fans. Why would we want Notre Dame? Ohio State?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Doesn't everybody hate
my
Ohio
favorite
State?
Football player of all time is from Ohio State, but I was still rooting for Notre Dame. Chris Carter.
Yeah. Nobody roots for Ohio State. Everybody hates Ohio State.
I know. So Ohio State, Michigan, I'm Ohio State.
When I
all
was a kid,
day.
You knew who my team was? The Miami Hurricanes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Catholics against convicts. Yeah. I'm all for the convicts.
Right, right. You would think I would have been too. I was a Notre Dame fan then too.
I was all about the convict team.
Right.
Yeah. Catholics against convicts. Do you remember when that happened?
I do.
When they all wore the jerseys?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that was the big thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a sports junkie, so like that's my world. So anyways, to answer that question, yeah, anything sports related, we are all in. Ping pong. I love the ping pong table. My son and I get a game in at least every week. So all that stuff's good. Pong.
Yeah, on Sunday I walked upstairs and they were like taking these deck of cards and they were trying to flip them through this little
trick
hole.
Trick shots.
And it's like, so they're like all the sports trick type stuff. Wow. So
Dude Perfect.
All, yeah, this
we're big
about.
Into Dude Perfect and yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah, awesome.
That's it?
That is it.
All right, Jennifer, so send us off. So give everybody the number to be able to text you.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're not part of the Roundtable texting group, you can text podcast to 260-408-8383. And then every Tuesday, we'll send out a text message of who our guest is going to be and a little bit of bio about them. So you can text us some questions that we could get to know them even further.
Yeah. Awesome. So when this comes out, so if you're watching and or listening, when this comes out, make sure that you share, like, comment. That way it gives us an opportunity to get Aaron's story out to a lot more people, because that's what we believe in, the power of story. I mean, that's been Life Church forever. And so we think everybody's story matters. And so your story. And again, I think this is because I think that there is this, I won't say it's a mindset, but people that think like you can never get over addiction, right? And that you can never flourish after addiction. So, I mean, seeing stories of people and hearing stories of people that can flourish after addiction, can flourish in the things that God has for them, even though life doesn't go quite the way that it's always supposed to go. So I think that's a great story to be able to share. So if you're watching, listening, whatever, share this when it comes out. And then if you see Aaron at church, make sure you come and say hi. And he's always up in the children's ministry, it seems like, for the first service. And you're a second service guy all the time, right?
Yeah, I go so first service.
You're
teach.
With the service that actually makes noise.
Yes.
Yeah. We had a couple come to the first service because they were in Taylor's small group. And they were like, the first service is a lot bigger, but what's wrong with everybody?
Yeah.
Like the second service?
I think it's because it's 9:30, man. They're not awake.
Well,
I don't know
what it is, but she's like, they both said like they're just not like into it. There's like in the second service, you got people whooping and hollering and raising hands. Yeah. And so if you come to the second service once in a while, it's quite a different experience.
Right.
So again. So Aaron, thanks for joining us. And again, don't forget, like, comment, share, come up and say hi to Aaron. But we just want to thank everybody for joining us, and we'll see you guys next week.